Have you ever had a day when you just could not? Have you ever wondered why you work so hard and try so hard and nothing ever changes no matter what you do? I'm Connie Jones and I've been there too. And on the Warrior Arise podcast, we talk about how to get the breakthrough you need to live your best life and soar in next level success. It's a battle, but victory and prosperity are our inheritance. Let's take this promised land together. Hey, warriors, welcome to another episode of the Warrior Arise podcast. I'm your host, Connie Jones, and I'm excited for you to hear our awesome guest today and her incredible story, too. Got another great story for you today and lots of good wisdom. Nancy McKay is a friend of mine. She is a recovery and resilience expert. She's a life and equus coach, which means she works with horses, and she helps women find their voice and build their courage. She's the founder of Amazing Outlook Coaching. She works with women virtually and with the help of horses, as I just said, to uncover the limiting beliefs that are keeping them stuck in the muck. Nancy is also an author and a speaker. Her chapter in Ready to Fly, Volume 3, The Intersection of Desperation and Grace, which you're going to hear about today, is her inspiring story of recovery and creating a new life after cancer. Nancy's in Lakewood, Colorado, and she's available for speaking opportunities across the U.S. And for podcasts. And we are excited to have her on our podcast today. And Nancy and I got to know each other through our business coach and some in our mastermind that we've been together on. And we've done several retreats and things together. And we both share the love for horses and animals. And you will just love Nancy. And Nancy, we welcome you to the podcast today. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Connie. It's great to be here.
Yes. Well, we're going to dive in because you are another warrior woman. And I'm so grateful to have so many incredible warrior women in my life and to, you know, to be able to share all that you've learned through your journey, your struggles, your, the breakthroughs that you've gotten in life so that you can no longer have to stay stuck in the muck or stuck in struggle, striving and surviving, as I say, and you can really break through and thrive. And that's what we're created to do. So we heard your a little bit of your story and a little bit of your, you know, what you do, but I want you to share your story with our audience and that big turning point when you were on that desperation or on that point of desperation and grace, and how that turned into launching you into what you do today and how you're impacting people.
Well, great. It's a good story.
Yes, it is. It is an incredible story for sure.
So I was brought up in a highly functional alcoholic household. And, you know, my parents did, a really good job, you know, of raising their children. And, but they drank, and frequently a lot. And so what that does is it, you know, alcohol removes you from the present circumstances, you know, from your environment. It creates a buffer, so to speak. And so when you've got children, it creates a buffer between you and your children. And I didn't understand all of that until just recently when I was reading Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Bruce Perry's book about trauma. And the title of that book is What Happened to You? And I now understand that because of how I was raised, which certainly wasn't abusive by any standard, really, except that my parents weren't present, you know, in the emotionally present all the time.
They were disengaged. Yeah, because you are when you're drinking. Sure.
So what I learned was that led to me not having the tools that I needed to, you know, really launch myself into life successfully, right? So I didn't have that I'm enough. That wasn't instilled in me. And so I have spent all of my life looking for things out there to make me feel enough inside. And so, you know, that led to, I started drinking myself in high school. It led to promiscuity later on, and a lot more alcohol abuse. And, you know, everything that goes with that, you know, the, you know, it affected how I dealt with money. You know, I feel like, you know, if you want something, you buy it, you charge it.
Sure.
And then you pay for it at some later point, right?
Yeah. And I've been there, done that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't work so great. Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, so how I was brought up affected everything. And then my mother died from lung cancer at 64 years old. My father, who was a full-blown alcoholic, he got sober just a few months before my mother died. And he was in and out of sobriety for 10 years, I think it was. Yeah. So finally, he couldn't do it anymore. And so he committed suicide in 2007. And that pushed my heavy drinking into alcoholic drinking because I felt so guilty. And the only thing that made that pain tolerable, I guess, is probably, it may not have even made it tolerable. It just
took the edge off, maybe?
It didn't soften. Because, you know, let's face it, alcohol is a depressant. So when you're, and I suffer from depression anyway, you know, so then you throw alcohol on that and it negated all the antidepressants I was taking. And it makes you really melancholy, right? So I feel guilty anyway. And then I'm drinking on top of that, and that's making it worse. And yet it's cocooning it enough for me to continue on, you know, wake up every day. So I carried on like that for a couple years until one evening my husband and I went to happy hour with some friends. So we come home from happy hour, and we walk in the house, and I said, damn it, we forgot to stop and get wine. I finished, you know, there was just this much left in the bottle, and I finished it before we left. And my husband said, well, you know, I think you've had enough. And those five little words put me over the edge. And I got angry and I stomped off and I went into the bedroom and slammed the door and had myself one hell of a pity party. And then the pity party evolved into a downward spiral to where I decided that everyone would be better off without me. And so I got the handgun out of my husband's nightstand and put it to my head, and it didn't fire because the safety was on. And I really couldn't figure out how to take the safety off. And because I was drunk enough, I almost called my husband into the room to have him show me how to take the safety off. That's how, and it wasn't, out of it, I guess, because it's like, well, so anyway, then I figured out how to take the safety off, and boy, those triggers are sensitive. because the gun fired before I could get it back up to my head. And thank God. So, you know, the only thing that got shot was an innocent pillow on the bed. And I still have the bullet in my jewelry box. And because, you know, I had that as a reminder of that's where I go when I drink. And
oh, that is a powerful statement. Wow.
I was at that moment, the gun fired. And that is my intersection of desperation and grace. You know, God or the universe or whatever you believe in reached down and saved me. And you know, I'm shaking right now, just you know, my insides are shaking. Just putting myself back there. And it's, you know, it was powerful in so many ways. You know, it scared me sober. I haven't had a drink since. And that was in, that was Friday the 13th of March, 2009. And, you know, that was my lucky day, Friday the 13th, you know, and so that happened. I had never, you know, and up to that point, I knew I had a problem, but I didn't have anybody to talk to about it, really. I had a neighbor who ultimately took me to my first AA meetings, and she and I would talk about it, and she was just leaving me little breadcrumbs, you know, letting me know that she was there for me when I was ready. And but other than her, you know, trying to, you know, persuade me to go to AA, I didn't have anybody else to talk to. And I was looking for something, you know, and had been for years, but I couldn't, you know, it was either quit or keep drinking. You know, there was nobody to talk to about the middle between stop and go, right? And so...
So let me ask you, and I hate to interrupt you, but let me ask you there, because that is a really, that's in such an important point. So you knew you were aware, you weren't just in complete denial and running from one thing to the next and one drink to the next, that you didn't ever touch down and know that you were looking for something. You knew that you had a problem. And how did you know that it, you know, because a lot of people, you know that they have a problem, but they just keep doing it. So what allowed you to keep going despite the fact that you knew that it was not, like, you know, it was insanity, as we call it, you know, continuing to do the same thing and hoping for a different result. But obviously you didn't feel like there was hope, there was an answer, there was, like you said, the middle. That was there was nobody to meet you in that middle and to help you through that middle. So you just kept doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But you knew there was something missing.
Yeah, I knew. Yeah. And probably for at least 10 years, I knew before I quit drinking that there was, you know, it was affecting me negatively. You know, not only was I waking up damn near every day with a hangover, which got worse and worse and worse over the years, but I knew, you know, I'm a seeker, you know, and so I was always looking for something. Of course, it was all out there, right? But I was, you know, I was doing all the things. I was reading all the right books and doing all the stuff, right? But nothing answered the question that I had.
Nothing worked.
Yeah.
So alcohol wasn't working. You knew that, but it was working more than anything else.
Exactly. And, you know, everyone I was hanging out with was drinking pretty much like I was. So,
yeah.
So, you know, it was like, well,
what's so wrong with it?
Yeah. You know, and of course, by the end of the day, you know, you may wake up thinking, that's it. Never again. I'm not drinking anymore. And then, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock rolls around and it's like, well, it wasn't really that bad. you know, I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. You know, it's just not that bad. So then you pour yourself a drink and you forget how bad it was until the next day. And then it's that vicious cycle, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So by the time March 13th rolled around, 2009, now I wake up every day with the shakes. I can barely put my eyeliner on because my hands are shaking so bad. And, you know, I had that internal bar that I was not going to go below. And that bar was, there is no drinking in the morning. You know, that we will, you know, we will never do that, right? Unless we're at brunch, you know. But if I had continued on for another week or two or a month, I would have been drinking in the morning, because that would have been the only thing that would have stopped my hands from shaking. So it would have gone there. And you know how it is when you make concessions about boundaries, then it just makes it that much easier to make another concession about a bigger boundary, you know? And so, you know, it was going to get ugly no matter what happened. And so, you know, the suicide attempt was all it took. Thank God. I started going to AA, sobbed my way through the first meeting I went to, and thought, you know, well, it's come to this and I'll never have fun again, but oh well, I guess I'm alive. So what the hell? And so I just tried to put one foot in front of the other. And then I learned that this was a really good way to live, and that I had lots of things to look forward to as long as I didn't drink. And so I hung in, you know, and I had some days where I thought, you've got to be out of my mind, you know, but I hung in, you know, and I'm really, really glad I did. And, you know, a year later, I got a great job in the corporate world. You know, I was in the oil and gas industry before, and I got back into the oil and gas industry after, oh God, I don't know, I was out of it for 14 or 16 years or something, and I was stunned, and they paid me a lot of money. And I was like, this is awesome. You know, life is good, right? And it was great. And then 6 years later, 6 years from the time I got sober, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And that was, you know, I talk about these gifts of adversity, and cancer, cancer is really scary. I was very lucky. I was diagnosed early, which is almost unheard of with ovarian cancer. And, you know, so I went through chemo and did all the things and lost all my hair and all that stuff. And after treatment, things just, my perspective on life started to change, you know, and it wasn't like a sudden shift, but it was, you know, little things. And things started not feeling quite right at work, you know, and I felt like I had gone as far as I could go, and so on and so forth. And so.
And what do you mean you felt like you'd, as far as like in your career?
In my career.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, with, at least with that company. And it was a great company, and I had lots of friends there, and it was really, you know, it was a great place to work, but I felt like
there was more,
you know, there had to be something more, you know? And I would sit at my desk and think, God, you know, this can't be all there is. You know, I've just, you know, gone through all this stuff. And so I started saying to myself, you know what? I didn't get sober and survive cancer to be miserable.
Yeah, exactly. You had survived two times at this point, two near-death experiences.
Yeah.
That will make you think. That'll shift your perspective in incredible ways, life-transforming ways.
Right. So even though my cancer wasn't terminal by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. But
it got my attention.
Sure.
Right? I had been, diving into the self-development pool. You know, I had taken a class that Brené Brown had put on, and I did a little dipping in my toes into things. And by the time I was, well, it was like Christmas vacation before I turned 61. I read this book because Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, she did a little post on Instagram that said, every woman in the world needs to read this book. It's called Diana Herself, and it's written by my dear friend, Martha Beck. And I knew, I knew of Martha Beck from the Oprah magazine. You know, she wrote a weekly column or a monthly column. And I thought she was great. You know, she was funny and she was wonderful. And this book, I decided I had to have it. So I read the book over Christmas vacation. And it was like she wrote that book just for me. And I thought, by God, I'm gonna change things. And so I had already gone through a coach training program for to be a mind-body eating coach through the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. So I was already, investing in myself, learning maybe how to do something different, probably on the side, but we'll see. And then I read this book, and then Martha was at held a retreat at 1440 Multiversity, which is this unbelievable place in California in the Redwoods, and it's she was going to be there for a weekend, and it was over my birthday. And I thought, well, I'm going to go spend my birthday with Martha. Well, regrettably, it was also my husband's 60th birthday. Our birthdays are 2 days apart. And so so he had to take one for the team there. But I missed out on my 60th birthday because I had fallen and torn my rotator cuff. And so I was having surgery repair that right before my 60th birthday. So I figured, wow. Well, if mine was ruined, so can his. So, so for my 61st birthday, I got to spend it with Martha Beck and about, 300 other lucky people. And through that, I decided I was going to enroll in her coach training. And so I came home from that trip, and that was the first thing I did was sign up for Wayfinder life coach training through Martha Beck. And, the rest is kind of history. Some of the coaches that work for her also are Equus coaches through Coel Simpson. And so one thing led to another. And I thought I got to taste some of the Equus coaching, and I thought, I have to add that to my skill set. I have to learn how to do that. And so then I did that. And so here I am. I was diagnosed. So I'm 6 years post-op, it'll be seven in February. I was diagnosed on my 58th birthday. And so, so getting sober, trying to commit suicide, getting sober, and having cancer are the best things that ever happened to you.
That's right.
And most people would say that they were the worst things that ever happened to them. But for me, it's all a gift. And it's just, my life is so much better because of all of it. And I know that you know, all of this happened before I had the skill sets that I've got today. You know, I didn't have all my tools back then, right? And so I really couldn't say that it's all because of mindset, even though I already had a great positive mindset, which is why I named my company what I did. You know, I had come up with the name Amazing Outlook before I got sober. That was my email address, you know, way back when.
And
you know,
one of those email times was, after you were reading the right book,
yes,
and you were going to change,
exactly.
You were going to change it for yourself. You were going to, yeah. I'm going to just have an amazing outlook and everything's going to change.
Yes.
And
so that all started then, right? And so then when I decided to be a coach, it was like, well, of course, Amazing Outlook Coaching. I mean, it was a no-brainer for me. So, you know, that's what I want to do, is help other people have an amazing outlook and know that there's different ways to go about recovery. And you know, my goal is to help people before they get to the point where they hit rock bottom, put a gun to their head, throw in the towel, do something. You know, there's all kinds of ways to get help. And I'm just one of them. But since I've been through it, and now I've got all these amazing mindset tools. Because when we have the right mindset, we can make anything happen.
That's right. We are powerful, powerful divine beings. We are amazing, powerfully creative beings. And we're either consciously or we're unconsciously creating in every moment of our lives. And so we've just got to be aware of which one we're doing and shift it if it's not working for us. So
exactly.
Well, let's talk about how does the equine coaching come into this? Like, for a lot of people who don't know what that is, you know, they say, oh, horses. And, you know, and most of the time what I find is that people know equine counseling, but they don't know equine coaching. So tell us the difference and tell us what you actually do with the horses to help people get the breakthrough, get to move forward in their life.
Okay. Well, equine therapy frequently involves riding. A lot of equine therapists work with children who have physical disabilities, and riding a horse helps them build their muscles and so on and so forth. So it's great for kids with cerebral palsy and muscular dystrophy and that sort of thing, so that they can, you know, use different muscles than they're used to and so on and so forth. And it's also really great for veterans and people who have PTSD, and skilled therapists, help them with that. I am not a therapist. I'm a coach. And so what I do is it's all groundwork. There's no writing involved. And what the horses are amazing co-facilitators. So they're great lie detectors. Horses are herd animals, and so they like to join up with whomever or whatever is around them, as long as it's not a predator, right? So if you're hanging out with a horse, if they trust you, they're going to join up with you. But if they sense something about you that is incongruent, then they're not going to interact with you. They're going to be over on the other side of the round pen or the arena or wherever, but they're not going to be hanging out with you. So that's the first thing that they tell me is, you know, if they're on the other side of the round pen, then I know that my client is not being honest with themselves. So they can tell me whatever they want to tell me, but if they're telling themselves, you know, something different, the horse picks up on that, right?
Exactly.
So I get
telltale
to call
sign.
Yeah. So I get to call bullshit.
Absolutely. Right? That's right. Yeah. And you and I were just at a little retreat together a couple months ago where we, and I've had a lot of equine coaching and have done and been trained in some equine coaching and done some equine coaching. So I've experienced firsthand what you're talking about. And it is unbelievable, amazing. I've actually taken a women's group out on a retreat to do some equine coaching. And so I and you and I had an experience recently where we saw that firsthand too, didn't we?
Absolutely. Yeah.
They will call us on our stuff. That's
they
for sure
do.
Very quickly.
They really do. And so, you know, if we are, what it takes is someone who is willing to be vulnerable and honest with themselves. And it doesn't even have to be verbally, you know, it just has, the horse just picks up on the energy. So, you know, the horse doesn't understand what you're saying to the coach, you know, whether, you know, they don't understand that. But what happens is when you land on your truth, your body relaxes. And the horse picks up on that. And when they relax, you know, when you relax, then here comes the horse and they're relaxed. They're, you know, they drop their heads, they're licking and chewing. Sometimes they, you know, hit the ground and start rolling around and, you know, and they exhibit things that indicate that they trust you and that they're relaxed. Because if they're not relaxed, you know, if they don't trust you, they're not going to relax because they think that something could happen at any moment. And so they stay very alert. But when they know that you're relaxed, then they can do that too. And that's where the magic happens.
That is so true.
Because then the client, once they start to see how the horse gives them that feedback, then they just really relax into it. And they start being really honest and vulnerable. And then we can get to the meat of it. And it happens so much faster with the help of a horse. You know, I also do virtual coaching like you and I are talking, and that is very effective, but it takes a lot longer because we don't have the horse to give us feedback in the moment. And, you know, and I don't have that energetic intuition that the horse does. I mean, I think I'm pretty intuitive, but I don't have horse sense.
None of us at their level. Right.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, you might be able to bullshit me for a few sessions and, you know, and I might not be able to pick up on it, but, you know, let me get you in a round pen and we'll get down to brass tacks very quickly. And it's magic. It's just absolutely magic. It feeds my soul. It's like, I mean, it's like, how on earth did I do that other job when this was out there? You know, I could no sooner go back and do that type of work than fly to the moon tomorrow. You know,
it's existing and surviving. It's responsibility and duty and obligation versus living versus really coming alive and living fully alive. And that's what we're created for. And that's what we talk about here on this podcast all the time. And so you found it, you do it. You've walked ahead and never looked back. And so now tell us about the work that you do with, it's mostly with, people who are women who are in recovery, or are they early in recovery, not in recovery and want to get in recovery, or later in recovery? What does that look like? And what kind of work do you do with them?
Well, so all of my clients are women, and most of them actually aren't in recovery. Most of them don't need to be in recovery. I mean, I'm one of my clients right now has been sober longer than I have been, like 25 years. We don't talk about recovery. I mean, we're working on other stuff. One of my other clients doesn't have a problem with alcohol. One of my other clients does have a problem with alcohol. One of my other past clients had a problem with alcohol. So, you know, it's one of those things where recovery and resilience is my specialty.
Yeah, but you do.
And I attract all kinds of people.
Yes, yes. And when you say, let's talk about the resilience part for just a second. So someone who is in recovery, you can absolutely coach them. But someone who is just wants resilience, who wants resilience coaching, what does that look like? Who are those people and what kinds of things do you help them with?
Well, for me, resilience means being able to get through life's challenges without using something outside of themselves to cope. So alcohol, food, gambling, sex, whatever, shopping, Netflix,
work. Yep.
Exercise.
Yep.
So that's where the mindset comes in. And mindset is my whole premise. You know, what your thoughts turn into your results. My favorite question is, how do you want to feel? And then when someone says, well, I want to feel happy or at peace or, you know, delighted. Well, what thought can you think that's going to make you feel happy or at peace or delighted? You know, because that's where it starts. It doesn't, you know, everybody thinks, well, if I hadn't gotten cancer, then none of this shit would be happening. And that's not true, because it's not cancer's fault. Cancer is neutral. We think that cancer is an evil, horrible thing. I'm here to tell you personally, it was a big gift. So it depends on how you look at it. It depends on what your thought is. So circumstances are completely neutral. Something everybody can agree on, you know, cancer is cancer. It doesn't have to have the emotion packed into it. It's your thoughts about cancer that are making you suffer.
That's right. Judgments, right? Judgments. Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so because of our thoughts, then they generate a feeling and then we take actions based on that feeling. So if we're dreading something or if we're angry about something, then that's going to be reflected in the actions that we're taking, how we're treating ourselves, how we're treating other people, you know, what we're doing. And then that drives our results. But it all starts with thoughts.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, when you hear that, and I think you said something similar a few minutes ago, that our thoughts create our reality. And, you know, and I talk about this all the time. I'm a huge mindset person. So whatever it is that we're believing at the heart of us, whatever our truth is that we run through our subconscious, run through our unconscious, run through our conscious every day, that is what we're creating. And what we see in our life is just a mirror of what's going on inside of us. But we don't understand that. We think that we're the victim and things are happening to us. We don't realize things are happening for us. And we don't realize that we're creating all the things that are happening anyway in our reality. And that if we want to change those, we can change those with a mindset shift, with a belief shift. And so give us an example of how you help people do that, or how do you just say, you know, is it so easy as, because I hear people ask me this all the time, you know, is it just so easy as you like just saying an affirmation and you write down, you know, you're writing down your what would be a better thing to say there? And then all of a sudden you just feel better, or how do we do it?
So, I work with my coach and, she has provided me with this beautiful notebook. And so this page nobody can see this, is a thought download. And then this page are my models. And so, for instance, you know, I was telling you that, you know, we're working with my father-in-law, moving him into into memory care. And so, you know, the circumstance is my father-in-law moving to memory care. You know, it's a fact. It's something that we all can agree on. And we're the ones, the family are the ones that are attaching the emotion to it. There's really no emotion attached to that fact, right? So one of the things I wrote about was, this is going to be a tough day, right? And that gave me the feeling of dread. Now, I could have continued on down taking this going south and said, you know, we're going to get in and out of there. Or, you know, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to show up.
Just avoidance. Or, yeah.
Yeah. Avoid, whatever. And then, you know, then there's hurt feelings and people are angry and so on and so forth.
Well, and then you're still not dealing with the real problem inside. You're not transforming right. anything. You're just avoiding something.
Right. Yeah. So that's the unintentional. This is happening to me, right? But then, you know, if I go intentional, then yeah, we're moving him. And, you know, now the thought could be, this may be the very best thing for him. This may be a gift, right? And so that gives me a feeling of hope. And so now I can show up, I can be present, I can be of service, doing things with love, which was a test today because, you know, there's all kinds of players, you know, and you know, but all in all, you know, it was pretty clean. And so that was our result. You know, it was pretty clean. We didn't have any yelling and screaming except from Dad, you know, who doesn't like it. But, you know, I think ultimately this will be a gift for him if he allows it to be. But again, here, that's his mindset, right? And all I can control is my mindset. And so, you know, there's an intentional or an unintentional model that you write out when you do this thought download. You vomit on the paper and then you pick out your thoughts that are the most gnarly ones and you put them through a model. And the unintentional is when you think life is happening to you, and then you do another one right next to it, and you have the opportunity to change your thought and see how it plays out. And that works. And it, you know, and it's not one and done. You know, this is something that you need to do every day. And I'm learning to do it every day. I mean, it is
a discipline. That's right.
It's a discipline.
I've had to learn that too. And I share a lot about that in my book. And that's a huge part of my story. That was one of the biggest breakthroughs I had, was to learn to change my mindset, because I'm such a feeler. I'm such an intuitive, you know, everything that I felt was just real to me and it was a reality. And I didn't know how to shift that. I just felt powerless to my own feelings for much of my life. And so if I felt stressed, I was stressed. If I felt fearful, I was fearful. If I, you know, I didn't know how to shift that. I didn't know how to transform that. And so I love that we have to first be aware of what we're thinking and how it's affecting us. And then we have to take each thought and decide what we want to do with it, because we can change the reality of that. I love that. Oh, I love it. So that is a practice that, and it is, it's not easy in that moment, because what I hear people say a lot is, that just feels inauthentic if I say that. You know, if I just change my thought, then it doesn't feel real to me. I don't feel that. So I'm not going to, it feels fake, you know? And what I would say to that is, well, it will feel fake until you embrace it and until you speak it and you say it and you embrace it to the point that it starts to feel real. But if you don't ever try, you're going to always get what you've always gotten.
So, exactly right. And when you really look at your thoughts, I also follow Byron Katie and, you know, her thing is, well, is that thought true? And can you absolutely know that it's true? And it's not that maybe it's not true. It's to trigger the curiosity of maybe that's just a thought. Maybe there might be a different perspective, you know? And so if you look at things from the opposite point of view and, you know, from the other person's point of view, it's amazing how things can turn around. If you think, well, you know, he doesn't love me anymore. Well, do you love you? Do you love him? Maybe he does love you. You know? So it's really interesting to think about all the different perspectives and all the different things. And until you get curious about it, you won't know what really resonates. And then you find that, oh, well, maybe this feels more true than my original thought. And that's when you go, oh, oh boy, you know, there it is. There it is.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when you start believing that mindset shifts can actually happen and are helpful and beneficial, you know, because really until you have experienced it, you think it's mumbo jumbo and woo woo and all that stuff.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But until you experience it, you know, you're not going to believe. I think it's hard to swallow for a lot of people. Until they've experienced it. And, you know, one of the things that I love is, you know, the old saying, you got to see it to believe it. And I love the way, I think it was Wayne Dyer that said, you have to believe it to see it.
To see it. That's right.
And, yes. And that's how I choose to believe that if I can believe something, if I can think it, I can make it happen.
That's it. Yes. And we have that power. We have that ability in us.
We all do. Yeah, we all do.
It's amazing. We just have to. What do you think keeps people from realizing that and doing that work? What keeps people in the stuck and in the struggle and the surviving? Why do they settle for that when they know that this is available?
Fear.
Fear. Yeah.
I think fear of the unknown.
The unknown. Yeah.
Yeah, fear of the unknown and fear in their own ability. They're afraid of their own power.
That quote from Marianne Williamson that you are not afraid of, you're afraid of your of the greatness within you. You're afraid of, you know, so who are you to play small? What's that quote? Playing big quote by Marianne Williamson. I love that. That's what comes to mind. I know. I can't think of it either. But
it's also, you know, there's also a lot of people who are perfectly happy with the status quo. And that's okay. You know, that's okay.
How are you feeling? But are you feeling, is that producing what it is that you really want? Or are you just drowning that little voice inside that's calling for the more?
Right. Exactly.
Because that more is available.
Right. If you're content with the status quo and comfortable there, great. But if you're stuck in the status quo and it doesn't feel good, then we can help you out of it.
That's right. That's right? Exactly right.
I mean, that's what we do.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you don't have to stay stuck. There is hope. There's absolutely hope.
Yeah. Absolutely. Wow.
So what are you helping people do these days? How are you impacting your clients? And what are you like, what kinds of transformations are you seeing? And,
oh my God.
I know. Isn't it so cool to be able to do that with people?
It is so cool. It's so funny because I'm not a business coach and yet I'm happy helping two of my clients with business stuff. I mean, it's just stuff, really a kick in the pants, right?
Yeah.
So it's, and because it's all mindset.
It's all mindset. Right? That's exactly right.
And so, you know, we're doing business strategy based on mindset. And, you know, if you believe this, you can do this and you can do that. Oh, great. You know, so one of them, one of my, you know, she's just so, you know, I don't know how I could have done this without you. And, you know, you're going to be my coach forever, which is just a delight to hear.
Of course.
But, you know, so it's so much fun to work with people and to see their growth and, you know, see the changes. And then, you know, some of my clients who struggle with alcohol, they either, you know, some of them came to the decision that they weren't ready to quit. And that's okay too, you know? And maybe they will be able to control it. You know, I think it's difficult once you feel like you've got a problem with alcohol to continue to drink and be able to control it. I think, you know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol, you probably do. And so, you know, there's usually no good, no good way out of it without abstaining, really. I mean, it's because alcoholism is a progressive disease. And so
it's not going to get better.
It's not going to get any better. It's just going to get worse. So, you know, that's the thing that that's where I try to interject myself is helping people before it gets really dire and they have to go through, you know, the really tough stuff. And you know, I've seen a lot of my friends go through it and it's hard to watch. It's very hard to watch. And, so, you know, I try to reach them before they get there. And here's the thing that I think is so interesting is our society is built around alcohol. And our culture thinks that drinking is the norm and being, you know, unaffected by alcohol or drugs is abnormal. And that I think is it's a crock of shit, number one, but it's such a disservice to humans. And I, you know, I get pretty passionate about that and that, and, the stigma that's attached to, alcoholism and addiction, because a lot of people won't get help because they don't want to be put in that category. And I don't care for labels either. And yet, if people shared their stories more and more people are, but if people were more open about being in recovery, then it wouldn't be such an abnormality, you know?
If we all shared our struggles more vulnerably, then none of our struggles, because we all have our struggles. It's just a matter of how we judge it. A struggle is a struggle
exactly.
is a struggle.
A struggle is a struggle.
It's a judgment, you know, about why can't I can't struggle with that. That's, you know, I can't talk about that. Well, it's no different than anybody else's struggle as far as the amount of struggle that you have, you know, it's, we just all need to be sharing our struggle or shame would not have such power.
Exactly. And that's what it boils down to is shame.
Yeah. to keep
us. That's what everybody has in spades.
Yeah. To keep us from true healing and true freedom.
Yeah.
Which is what another story of you, how you got your freedom, and another instance today, you guys who are listening, of how freedom and healing and life, true life, living fully alive, is available to us. And so it's, you know, whatever your struggle is, then, you know, there is help, there's hope, there is, and you may not be able to do it alone. I wasn't able to, I know you weren't able to, Nancy. And it's okay. It's kind of the way we were created to not do it alone. So, so it's okay to ask for help. It's more than okay to ask for help. That's the way we were created, is to need help. And so, well, any, as we close, thank you so much for sharing your story and your wisdom with us. And you guys will put the ways that you can contact Nancy and read more about her and all that she's doing in the show notes. So definitely look for that. But is there one more piece of encouragement, one thing that you want to leave our listeners with today, Nancy, that just comes to your heart?
You know, one of my favorite quotes is on my wall. And it says, the best way to predict your future is to create it. And I just love that. I mean, it really is. Yeah. And it, if you don't do it, no one will. So if you want something different in your life, you have to be the one that goes for it. And there's a lot of help out there, no matter what kind of goal you have in mind or struggle that you're, you know, trying to get out of or work around or whatever it is. So reach out for help. And, you know, there is no shame or judgment in asking for help of any kind.
Yeah, that's it. No kidding.
Don't let shame stop you.
That's right. So you guys, help is available, and you do not have to continue to struggle, strive, and survive. You were created to thrive. So we thank you, Nancy, again for being here. We have to
thank
close
you for very much.
Absolutely. We have to close for today, but you guys, I hope you have a great rest of the day, whatever you're doing and wherever you are. And that you remember that you have the power to create a new reality. You have the power to change your life. You have the power to change the way you feel. And I hope that you choose to live fully alive and to thrive, and to live in the fullness of who you were created to be, in the true essence, in the authenticity. So, all right, you guys, go live bravely, freely, and authentically you. And we will see you back on the next episode of the Warrior Arise podcast. See you next time. Thanks, guys. Bye. I'm so glad you tuned into this episode of the Warrior Arise podcast. I look forward to continuing our journey together as we live in freedom and fullness as the powerful warriors we are. Please subscribe to be notified of new episodes. And if you glean wisdom and inspiration today, share it with a friend or a loved one. Also, write a review on iTunes. I'll see you on the next episode.